If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from George Mason University School of Business. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Tom McBride-Cressa, Mark Haas, AEG, Victor Hoskins, Arlington Economic Development, B.A. Spignardo, Shapiro Lipschitz and SRAM, Andrew Bridge, Eagle Bank, Amanda Mitchell, Morgan Franklin. And we have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Marty Piperl, Dean, George Mason University School of Business, Julie Murphy, Partner and Senior Vice President of Public Relations, Sage Communications, Tom Raffa, Founder and CEO of Raffa PC, and Mark Witte, President and CEO of Enhanced Veteran Solutions. Like to introduce our first guest, Marty Piperl, Dean, George Mason University School of Business. Maury, what is the George Mason University School of Business? What are you guys doing?
Thanks for asking. And realizing I've only been here a couple of months, I'm pleased to say that George Mason, mm-hmm. as a university, is one of the fastest growing, one of the biggest in Virginia. And we are taking people from all walks of life and helping them to find useful and growing careers.
Where are you from originally?
I'm actually from Silver Spring, just across the river, but I've been away for most of the last 35 years.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have a younger brother and younger sister.
So you're the oldest of three, and tell us a little bit about what mom and dad did for a living.
So my parents are trained as chemists. They're certainly scientists, scientific thinkers, and they worked as chemists for a while, and then my father became a scientific translator. My mother took time off to raise kids, went back to work for the FDA, and my dad developed a second career as a visual artist.
All right, so I understand when you were a kid that you were recognized for your academic achievements. In fact, they wanted to advance you a grade, and then eventually you advanced the grade. And how'd that make you feel?
Well, there was the feeling of opportunity, but there was also the feeling, as it happened to be the last grade of elementary school where they skipped me, of missing out on being the, you know, the big seniors. But it was good. It was a positive experience.
And I understand when you were in summer camp, somehow you got involved with ham radio. And what was the reason for that? Why were you so interested in ham radio?
Yeah, because, of course, I went to summer music camp, so what I learned was something more technical. But interestingly, there's a musicality to radio, especially Morse code, in which I'm fluent, which is a completely useless skill.
Wasn't it the fact, didn't you mention earlier that, you know, you liked figuring out how things work and putting them back together again?
Definitely.
My sense was that one of the reasons you were involved with ham radio is you got to talk to people from around the world?
That's right. My initials are MAP, MAP, but I never got to travel much as a kid. I stared at world maps, and I loved having a chance to talk to people from other parts of the world, which radio gave me.
Bea, you got a question?
Sure. So you're an academic, and you performed well academically as a child. What was your inspiration to do so well in the classroom and then to continue to pursue that as you got into your adult life?
Interestingly, I'd have to say I'm a pracademic because part of it was the inspiration of science and my parents and the data-driven side and the performance, but part of it was problem-solving. How do you figure things out so you can make a difference, fix things, et cetera, et cetera? So both of those.
Mm-hmm. Amanda?
Before we got on the air, you called yourself a Renaissance man. What does that mean?
Well, when I was 12, when I was saying that's what I wanted to be when I grew up, it was somebody who can cover all kinds of different subjects and put things together, make connections. I think that's what it means, and I think we need more of them.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
If I read your autobiography, what would I take away from the chapter of you as an 8 to 14-year-old?
Well, I hope you take away a combination of ambition and also creativity, really.
Mm-hmm. Andrew?
You mentioned earlier that your dad was a Holocaust survivor. What kind of effect did that have on you growing up?
Well, interestingly, he was always so appreciative and creative and emotional just to sort of be there, and I share some of that. He's lucky to be out alive, and I'm lucky to be alive because he's alive.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
What's the best part about your new gig here at George Mason?
The best part about this gig is being able to put the people together across all kinds of boundaries, whether it's social, economic, disciplinary, geographic. Mason is a place where all kinds of people come together, and interestingly, they all tend to do well, and that's an opportunity that's new for me. I've tended to be in fairly specialized.
Well, that's interesting. You mentioned you really see this as a crossroads, as the integrator around here. I'm wondering if you've had any experience anywhere else
where I've integrated?
Well, any other parts of the world, for example?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I lived most of my career and worked in England, and had a chance to build a program when I was at London Business School that pulled together Columbia University in New York, Hong Kong University in East Asia, and got people to cross borders. It's something that's very, very important to me.
What's important to you?
The ability to connect people around the world, across borders, across differences, helping people to see how the other people see the world. I think that's the most important skill you can have.
What's the most important skill you can have?
To be able to see the world the way the other person sees the world, even if it's not what you think.
And you think George Mason can play that role?
I do. I think we can help people to play that role because we are in a part of the world with a large set of stakeholders that really are so diverse that it's a natural place to convene those kind of conversations.
Mm-hmm. Who's got the next question?
What age did you have this insight that this actually mattered, getting another person's perspective?
That took me a while. I don't think I was known as a kid for being very balanced and broadly integrative among my peers. So I think it was after I blew enough social relationships, probably in college or after, that I started to see the truth of what you
referred to. Amanda?
You said before that you were lucky to be alive because of your father's experience. How does that translate into how you're helping people today?
You know, I don't want to be overly dramatic. It was my grandparents who figured out how to save their lives, and it worked out. You know, I'm just privileged to be here. But I think it's important to recognize that if people understand how to bridge differences, then there's much greater chance that the many cultures in the world will continue to flourish rather than tearing each other down. And I care a lot about that.
You care a lot about what?
Cultures connecting and flourishing together rather than tearing one another down.
Mm-hmm. Next question. Who's got it?
So I believe you mentioned the first time you were on an airplane was when you were 21 years old, and you have this appreciation of cultures and this international travel and academic experience. Where does that come from growing up in Silver Spring, Maryland?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I've studied this. Appreciation for cultures, et cetera, doesn't come specifically from traveling. You got lots of people that travel that learn nothing. It really comes from deeply engaging. And remember, my father was born in Europe. I was in a mixed neighborhood growing up. I studied languages. I read a lot of authors around the world. So it's that exposure, not just the travel.
Andrew?
It seems like you did this ham radio. And what was the experience of the first person from outside the United States that you connected with that may have had an influence on what you're doing?
You know, when you're talking over radio or Morse code or something, it's pretty low bandwidth, so you're not learning their wisdom. But just the fact of them being there, looking at the map, hearing the name, understanding where they are, this, I think, was the beginning.
So you've been in the, how long have you been the dean of the George Mason? 3 months. And what's the first year going to look like? What kind of differences are you going to make? What kind
thanks
of stuff are you going to do?
Thanks for asking. Partly it's reaching out, understanding how our markets and our stakeholders see us, what they expect from us. Partly it's looking in and figuring out what we can usefully do in the world that's important, that's differentiable, almost like in a business. But we're an expertise institution. I think we're going to be reaching broadly out to see if we can't develop further our brand. We're certainly going to be looking to develop this facility here in Arlington, Virginia, as well as build a new building, not in the first year, but in Fairfax. There's something about identity, something about outreach that our school has lots of opportunity to do, including connecting with more of the local businesses and government agencies.
Amanda, you have another question?
I do. Some might say that you're, spread thin. You have access to leaders. You have access to incredibly intelligent people. You've been all over the world. What specifically gets you up in the morning?
The ability to actually make a difference in people's lives every day. The older I get, the more that's the case.
The older you get, more what's the case?
The more that's the case, the more urgent I feel the need to actually get up and make a difference. I'm sure others share that. It's called, that psychologists call it generativity. It's when you get to a particular stage, you better be useful.
Uh-huh. And when you say make a difference, how do you want to make that difference? What's
that? Well, I'd like to help other people to help themselves. I also like to be the bridge. I like to be the person that puts together different institutions, different individuals, different whether it's students, researchers, companies, whatever it is. I enjoy that role very much.
Who are the stakeholders in a university? I thought it was just the students. Maybe I'm mistaken.
No, you got the faculty, you've got the alumni, you've got the staff, you've got the state, you've got the community, both locally, regionally, and also globally. So anybody who cares about learning, because what we're about is enabling that learning, not only as undergraduates and graduates, but on a lifelong basis. That doesn't happen automatically. There's a lot of things we can do to help the world in that regard.
Are you going to be doing stuff to engage different kinds of communities in this school?
Yeah, we already are, like, including here in Arlington. Arlington, the Fairfax, the Northern Virginia Chamber of Commerce, the Academy of Business Schools. Mm-hmm. There are the 3, 4, 5 levels on which we engage. And it's not all me. We have different people in the school who do this, and disciplinarily as well. And in entrepreneurship, we're pretty big. In accounting, we're pretty big. Information systems, government contracting, the list goes on.
Well, the different... I guess the good thing about being the dean of significant business school is that you get to come in at 10 or 11 and leave at 3 or 4 and have cocktails.
Yeah, I do that.
You don't do that? What time do you start with
your email? I do that on Sundays.
What time do you start with your email in the morning?
What time do I start? It does depend a bit on the day, but I tend to get up between 6 and 7, which for some of my staff is late.
And what time do you stop at the end of the day in terms of doing emails or talking on the phone regarding the school?
Actually, I integrate. I've thought about this work-life balance thing in a number of ways over a number of years. I integrate. I go back and forth. I take breaks. Mm-hmm. I'll go for a walk. Mm-hmm. I might meditate, whatever, and I'll go back
to
work.
What's the website address for this organization?
It's business.gmu.edu.
Let me have that one more time.
business.gmu.edu.
We've been speaking with Maury Piperl, who is the dean of the George Mason University School of Business here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. And your name is?
John Hellerman.
And John, what's your organization's name?
Hellerman Communications.
And what is Hellerman Communications? What do you guys do?
It's a public relations firm for professionals. We help lawyers, accountants, engineers, academics, anyone selling their expertise for a living. We help them differentiate it by getting credentialed and recognized.
How do you go about doing that?
Well, we create strategic plans for each professional, and depending on their market, we help them find the awards that are appropriate, join the groups that are appropriate, expand their reputation and professional expertise.
What were you like as a kid? Were you doing that kind of stuff when you were a kid?
I was always working when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. What kind of stuff were you doing?
I found a lot of odd jobs. I worked in the cash register at a used furniture store when I was very young. I busboyed when I was in my teens. But I when I was traveling with my parents, I used to, when I was very young, used to hook myself up with different jobs at resorts and things while I was staying there to get privileges like riding jet skis. Or
what kind of stuff are you bringing from your childhood into your professional career?
Well, I think I was always just interested in meeting people, and so I was always a curious kid, and working with different professionals, different expertise, we get to work on sort of the most intriguing things, the biggest headlines of the day, and then we can do something else the next day.
Do you like creating change? You like doing different and promotion and marketing, huh?
I do.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been doing this for?
Just over 20 years.
Oh, so you know what you're doing with marketing and PR. I guess it's changed over the years, hasn't it?
Drastically changed. From faxing things originally to now communicating mostly via social media platforms and group chats and things like that.
And what's the website address of your organization?
It's www.hellermanllc.com.
Let me have that one more time.
www.hellermanllc.com.
And we've been speaking with John Hellerman, president and founder of Hellerman Communications, here on Executive Leaders Radio.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off. Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Julie Murphy, who is a partner and senior vice president of public relations at Sage Communications. Julie, what is Sage Communications?
So we are a full-service marketing firm. We work primarily with technology companies, nonprofits, and public sectors, and I run our PR team.
You run the PR team. Where are you from originally?
I grew up locally here out in Centerville, Virginia, in Fairfax County.
Uh-huh. And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older sister who's a teacher and a younger brother who's a banker.
And you mentioned that even though you grew up in the same house, from fourth to ninth grade, you end up moving to new schools. And how did that feel?
You know, it was a high period of growth in Centerville where there were three new schools built at the same time that I happened to feed into. So I only moved houses once, but I ended up moving schools every year between fourth grade and ninth grade.
How did that feel?
I think I was going with the flow at the time, but it was pretty overwhelming because each school you went to, there were different kids. Some were the same. Some were different, a different physical environment.
So you mentioned earlier you thought the boundaries kept changing. What do you mean by that?
Well, the physical boundaries of the schools and the neighborhoods were changing, but it also felt like the boundaries of my world kept changing as well.
What do you mean?
Well, because I was constantly thrown into new situations, both the physical environment, new teachers, new kids, where you had to adapt and figure out how you were going to fit in.
So you mentioned that you kept on being thrown into new situations. I'm wondering how that serves you, that difficulty in childhood moving as you felt the boundaries kept changing. I'm wondering how that actually serves you in your role as a partner and senior vice president of public relations at Sage Communications.
So I work with a wide variety of clients. I think it helps me in a lot of ways because I'm constantly put into new situations, whether I'm helping a huge client with a household name like an Amazon or a Dell or a company that maybe you've never heard of ever, and they're just trying to put a stake in the ground. So each company that I deal with has a very different situation, and I have to customize the program for them.
Amanda, I'm wondering if you can relate to having to be whatever you need to be. What kind of question do you have for Julie?
Absolutely. You know, I was an only child, so I felt a lot of pressure too, but as a middle child, earlier on, you called yourself an instigator. And I'm wondering if that taught you how to advocate on behalf of your clients more strongly than your competition.
It could be. I mean, as the middle child, I used to joke with my parents that I was the forgotten middle child when I really wasn't. I was smack dab in the middle of my family, but I knew how to milk that. So it does teach you sort of how to take any situation and come up with the best possible outcome or the path forward, personally or for clients.
Thank you, Amanda. Victor?
Yeah. How do you get your clients comfortable with the uncomfortable?
You know, I think it's important to remember, I do a lot of speaker and media training, and I've yet to meet one person that feels comfortable getting up in front of a group of people, completely comfortable. Everyone's nervous. It doesn't matter how smart, how outgoing they are. So you just have to really push through it. You have to remind yourself who you are, prepare as much as you can, and just have the courage to jump in and know that it's most likely going to turn out
this way.
You mentioned the ability to adapt as you were switching schools. What other skills did you pick up on during that time period, or how did you adapt that affects your professional life today?
I think I became very observant of people, and different things make different people tick, and that's true, obviously, in the business world or even among colleagues and employees. You know, people come from all walks of life or at all different stages of their career. I work with a lot of millennials who are right out of school, and I often, as a Gen Xer, feel like I can be a bridge to the baby boomers and sort of explaining the workplace. And so I actually use it in almost every facet of my job.
Mark?
So knowing what's made you successful at Sage, what recommendations or advice would you give to Julie at 14?
To work really hard, which was actually the advice of my father, was military, very hardworking, great work ethic. And to work really hard and to not be thrown off course if there's a change, if the plan doesn't go as perfectly as you thought it was going to, or a wrench gets thrown in, it could be to your benefit. So just go with the flow.
Andrew?
You mentioned earlier that you joined everything, you know, student government, all kinds of clubs, and in your current life, you seem to join everything still. What did you learn that helped you continue to do that today?
You know, I realize I think it makes you really happy just to take life by the horns and to jump in head first. And so I think it's great to get involved in different organizations, to form those bonds with other people, to give back to the community. And now I do it both in terms of everything that's important in my life, including my children, obviously my family, and getting involved in their lives, as well as the business and all things that could help Sage and our clients.
Mr.
And our
McBride?
If you had to choose an event of your youth that would cause you sort of like a big pivot in your life, what would that be, and what did you learn from it?
Well, there were two, actually. I mean, my youth, I think during that time frame, just being exposed to new schools and new people all the time, and sort of getting my footing was probably...
But specifically, was there one school or was there one year that was the most difficult?
I think it was probably when I switched houses, because that was a completely new school.
At the same time as well.
Yeah, at the same time as well, a completely new set of people.
Charlie, you mentioned your children have had a significant effect on you, and I'm also wondering what effect your children have had on your career.
My children... I have had a significant effect on me, because I feel like as a mother, you don't love anything more than you love your children. So it just makes you look at the world a little differently. And so both in terms of clients and in terms of employees, just being sympathetic for whatever anyone's going through at any given time, whether it's something in the work life or something in the personal life, I think I pay attention a lot more than I used to.
And you also mentioned there was some medical stuff that happened earlier on, and what was that all about?
So both of my children were born with a very rare genetic disorder called biotinidase deficiency, and it was caught by the Virginia newborn screening that every baby gets tested for in the state of Virginia. And because they caught it so early, they've been treated since they were 2 weeks old, and they've never had a symptom from it. And so it goes back to how important nonprofits and the community-driven programs are that sort of can preventively help these things.
So how's that affected your business career?
Well, I've realized that their life could have been extremely different. You know, I mean, it was totally life-altering. So now they have a normal life. It's like brushing their teeth by taking this supplement every day, whereas it could have been very different. So take on a lot of in-kind clients. I like to give back to those sort of charities. So
tell me a little bit about that. What do you mean? What's in-kind mean? What do you mean?
It means, do you know what's interesting is for a lot of nonprofits and fundraising organizations, PR is one of the best in-kind, meaning free services that you can give someone, because they're all about building awareness around their cause or raising money. And so we do take a lot of those on, and we have done a lot through the years, and they especially sometimes tend to be children's charities. My most recent is with the March of Dimes, who are responsible behind the newborn screenings and also the health of babies.
I thought the business was all about blood and guts and take as much money as you can, but you seem to be giving back.
You know, the best part of the job is when you feel the impact that your work can have. Because
what are you talking about? What do you mean?
Well, our work can be very visible. I mean, you can get somebody on a major broadcast channel, and all of a sudden, so many more people know who they are. You can have a huge impact on something that seems like relatively small. And so whether it's for a business who's unknown, and now all these people know who they are, they have this great service that nobody knew about before, or it's a mission of an organization that you can help tell their story, being able to tell their story, make it unique, and and tell the world. It does some great stuff.
So you really enjoy you really enjoy what you're doing. You're really passionate about it, especially when it comes to the world of nonprofits and giving back, because some of the stuff you personally went through.
Yes, I love it.
That's interesting. I didn't realize this about business people. What's your website address?
It's aboutsage.com.
Let me have that one more time.
aboutsage.com.
We've been speaking with Julie Murphy, Partner and Senior Vice President of Public Relations at Sage Communications, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We will be back in a moment right after this break.
Biz Talk Radio is now available on Amazon Echo. Just add the Biz Talk Radio skills and ask Alexa for the latest business news. You'll instantly get live, relevant information from the best business source, Biz Talk Radio. Alexa, open Biz Talk Market Tips.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
This is Tom Skerritt for the Borgen Project. Each year, nearly 2 million children die from preventable diseases. Each day, 30,000 people die from hunger. 500 each hour are children. The Borgen Project is turning this around. We need your help. To learn more, go to borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
Do you want to fly somewhere, anywhere in the world? Smart travelers call myflightsearch.com for the best deals on flight tickets. Going to Manila, Bangkok, London, how about Singapore? Call myflightsearch.com for the lowest flight tickets available. What about a local vacation? Let's say you want to fly to Vegas, Orlando, Miami, Los Angeles, or Denver. Pick up the phone and call myflightsearch.com right now. We have exclusive deals that you can't find anywhere else. The only way you can get these low airline prices is by calling us. We have so many low prices available, we can't possibly tell them to you right here and now. If you're flying somewhere anytime in the next 6 months, and you want the lowest airline ticket prices anywhere, you owe it to yourself to save a ton of money. So pick up your cell phone and call myflightsearch.com right now.
Call 800-303-3398. 800-303-3398. That's 800-303-3398. Call now, 800-303-3398.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
When did your light bulb go off? We're talking about that idea you have for a new product or app. Listen, if you want to make your idea a priority, but you don't know how to get it off the ground, you call Davison. the one company with over 25 years experience and exclusive process that turns ideas into products and apps that are found in retail stores and online. Our team has helped tens of thousands of people, just like you. Call now and ask for our free idea starter guide. We'll show you how to securely get started and protect your idea. Whether you have a patent or not, our process will get your idea ready to get in front of a corporation. Don't let your light bulb of an idea go out. Call Davison now for your free idea starter guide. Davison charges fees for services. 800-213-9256. 800-213-9256. 800-213-9256. Again, that's 800-213-9256.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Tom Raffa, who's founder and CEO of Raffa. Tom, what is Raffa? What are you guys doing?
Raffa's various companies that work to affect positive social change.
Now, Raffa was originally an accounting firm that you started when? How many years ago?
Was 1984.
And it's evolved into what? How many people nowadays?
There's about 350 people in all the companies.
And it's a variety of different businesses.
Yes, it is.
What kind of businesses are you guys in?
Mostly when we started to work within the nonprofit sector to help build capacity so they could do more work in the community and better work, we just saw different needs that weren't being fulfilled in other places. So it grew into HR, technology, financial accounting services, insurance, wealth management. So it's all various companies.
So you're involved with a lot of different situations now. Where were you from originally?
I was born in Brooklyn, and then later in my life we moved to New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
The Jersey Shore.
How many brothers and sisters?
I had an older sister.
All right. Now, you told us in eighth grade something happened. Well, what happened to you in eighth grade? With the school, you wanted to go to a different school or something?
Oh yeah, our community grew up really quickly, and so the high school had to have a morning and afternoon session, which one started at 6, one started at 3. I wanted to do neither one of those. The other option was a school that cost about $750 a year to go into. So I just started to work to earn the money to go to that school.
So you were going into eighth grade, and you had the guts and the courage and the vision to realize, listen, I don't want to go to the public school. I want to go to this other school, and I'm going to go pay for it.
I had more the need than the guts.
Well, nonetheless, how'd you go about paying? How'd you go about making the money?
One of the best jobs was one of my older friends was working at Mammoth Racetrack, and you could walk horses. It was called hot walking, and you'd hot walk the horses for 25 minutes each for 2 hours. You had to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you had to be over 16. So in order to get in, my friend would I'd meet my friend at the gate, and he'd shove me in his trunk, and I'd go to walk horses.
And what else did you do to make money?
My father's side of the family were all very talented musicians. They all made their living that way. He had four brothers, and they just taught me very early on music. So by the time I was 13, 14, I was probably a pretty good musician at the time. So I worked in a studio in Asbury Park.
And yet you're running an accounting firm, but it's a very creative accounting firm. Tell us about Mom.
My mom was a school teacher, mostly volunteering. I think she probably spent more money on school than she actually made. For a long time, she was in the Catholic school. Yeah. And my dad worked in a factory on an assembly line, mostly with General Motors.
You mentioned some other stuff about your mom. You want to tell us about that?
You don't really realize it when you're a kid, but my mom was sort of a functioning alcoholic, so that made it a little bit interesting. My mother also felt and drove my father a lot to trying to raise money. Finances and dollars were important to her.
But it sounds to me like one of the reasons that you realize that now is because you've got a balance and you've sort of questioned what's meaningful in your own life.
Yeah, I often say like I learned a lot of what not to do for my parents than to do it. I know that sounds sort of cold, but I think over a period of my life I realized that there were certain different ways to measure your successes that were more important than maybe the long hours that my dad had to put in or the money that my mother strove for.
Well, it's interesting. You know, here you are. You're a success. I mean, you know, you built something that's incredible. I mean, you know, you started by yourself. It's 300. So how do you measure your success?
Mostly in terms of impact, changes in community. So, you know, when you're working initially, when we were working so much with the nonprofits and now the social sector, we could measure it through our clients. Have we improved their abilities to do better work in the community? Mm-hmm. Now we do a lot of the community work ourselves, and so we put projects together and,
Gotcha.
And
Victor?
Measure that way.
What about your childhood made you want to make social change through your work?
Well, I got in trouble when I was younger, so that was one thing that I felt like we were really unjustly prosecuted for without Miranda rights and things like that, so I wanted to help in that way. I thought that's sort of how it started, because nobody in my neighborhood was really going to college, and when I saw I might have the ability to do that, I thought the only way I could affect that was to become an attorney.
Did your parents influence you at all?
Well, I remember going and telling my dad that I was going to go to college, and he said, "That's nice."
Amanda?
Yeah, so thanks, Herb. For our listeners that who can't see, Tom has this long, perfect gray hair pulled back in a pony. You can tell that you march to the beat of your own drum. Tell us a little bit more about Dad and how you became you.
How I what? I'm sorry.
How you became you.
Oh, well, I think my dad really worked very, very hard. He was in a union, so he didn't have a lot of respect for management. So it was a little interesting when I was becoming more of management that was the guys that were going to boss him around. So we really weren't very tight after I moved out when I was about 17 years old and ended up going to Georgetown and really didn't reconnect with my family until much later after I was sort of working at PwC for a while.
So how did you find that strength and that positivity? You know, you told us a little bit about Mom that may have had a little bit of a negative impact. You're telling us now a little bit about Dad. How did you find that inside of you to just continuously err on the positive side of life?
I don't ever think I had a really negative attitude about anything throughout my life. When all of that was happening, it's easy to reflect back now, but it was a good childhood. I mean, I really felt like, you know, I don't think people recognize how little they might have as a child if there's love in the family.
PA?
You are very successful in running your companies, which is measured not only by your clients, but also by your peers. You were voted CPA of the year by your professional peers. How does this recognition by your peers and by your competition influence how you run your companies and the culture within your companies?
It really doesn't. I mean, I think in some of the awards that we've gotten, like when we were B certified, I learned a lot from it. I think there's, but the other one that we typically get is around volunteer hours, and I feel like I can't do that myself, and that's all my people that have the same similarity and the same feeling for purpose and effective social change. So it's those kind of awards mean something to me. Around my peers and things, I'm not that concerned. I've always sort of had my head down and just worked, and then every once in a while you look up and see what other people are doing, you realize you might be ahead of them.
Mark?
So many people growing up, they want to be a firefighter or an airline pilot or something. You said before that you really didn't have any particular image of yourself as an adult. Do you think that was a good thing that allowed you the creativity to forge your own path?
Yeah, I think if you look at a lot of my cousins now and other members of the family, they are blue collar guys and they're all great people and they work really hard. I think the idea of me not subscribing to that very young got me through school, which I think getting through college was a big changing point, a pivot for me.
Andrew,
you said when you were growing up that your family didn't have a lot of money and you didn't bring a lot of positive stuff from your parents. However, you said that they also did give what they had. So tell us how that influenced you.
Well, I think that was a major influence, and I certainly didn't mean to indicate that everything was taken away was bad for my parents. My parents gave to the church. They were very good Catholics. My mom volunteered at the school to teach. My dad, no matter how hard he worked, he always was at the church as an usher. So I think what it taught me is that no matter how little time or money people have, if they just gave a small part of themselves, civil society would be eons ahead of where it is today.
Tom, there's a connection between being a musician and math, and that gets you into accounting. Is there an elegance to accounting and creativity?
I think it's more that I don't really belong as an accountant as much as the creative side. So I always see myself as sort of this mad scientist that experiments with things. People call it risk, but I just have these small experiments. They blow up in my face every once in a while. I might singe my eyebrows. Doesn't do too much damage. I mix the ingredients differently, and I move on. And so a lot of what's happened looks like total upward progress, but it's really a jagged line that seems to move ahead.
Your firm is recognized for giving and creativity. How have you influenced the people that have come to your firm, and how have you formed that culture for them in order to do that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when I started, I had no intention around that. It was just about me and me doing it, and it felt good for me. It integrated as opposed to trying to balance my life. It integrated so well with what I wanted to be and who I wanted to be. And that as a model, I always say I lead my company, not run it, and people just followed. And they saw that I was volunteering. They wanted to try it. And before you know it, you create this culture, and there's hundreds of people doing similar things. And then all now, in the past 5 to 10 years, we've just attracted people like that. The newer generation really wants to do something more that's positive other than just make a living.
What's the proudest moment of being the founder of RAFA? The one proudest moment?
My wife is my partner, and we met at PwC. I started the practice. She came about 10 years later because they kept questioning whether she should be a partner or not because she was working 40 hours a week, which was part-time back then. So I convinced her to come over, and this year she won 3 awards for Woman Who Mean Business, the Jewish Woman of the Year Award, and then the GWCPA Award, and to see that really made me happy.
What made you happy?
Because the people that are around me that sort of get me, I think that it's what we do is contagious. Mm-hmm. Social change is contagious. And when you see other people embracing it so much that they get better at it than almost you are, that's pretty powerful.
That's really important for people to get you because you have a creative soul. It's not easily understood. Yes, no.
I don't know. I don't think I'm that hard to understand. I'm not that deep.
What's the website address?
RAFA.com.
RAFA.com. We've been speaking with Tom RAFA, who is the founder and CEO of RAFA.com. RAFA is the accounting firm here on Executive Leaders Radio. We will be back in a moment right after this break.
Nice. Excellent.
That was really good.
And your name and organization is?
Marnie Lefkowitz-Aram with Shapiro, Lifshitz & Schramm.
And Marnie, do you have a specialty in the firm?
I'm a transactional attorney with an expertise in real estate transactions.
And I was wondering, what kind of stuff in your childhood might have exposed you to what you're ultimately going to do in life?
I am the daughter of a real estate developer and a mortgage broker.
Was that one individual that did both? Was that mom and dad?
Dad was a real estate developer, one of the largest home builders in Florida in the 70s. My mother is a mortgage broker.
So you were exposed. How do you think the two of them affected what you're doing nowadays?
Well, when I was a young child, I was every weekend driven out to projects my father was working on, looking at raw land and seeing how it might develop into a community. And I also had a strong female role model who taught me it was okay to be an entrepreneur and make decisions.
So what's that have to do with what you're doing nowadays?
Well, we help our clients manage their transactions by overseeing what it is that they need to do to get it done. We push it through for them, and we do so kindly and with a lot of thought and analysis.
Sounds to me like your background actually gives you a competitive advantage over other attorneys that do what you do because you really appreciate what your clients are going through. Am I mistaken about that?
No, that's very much the case. In particular, I can understand what issues they're dealing with on the ground as well as when they have to start dealing with people, not just land.
So, and why do you understand that stuff?
It seems innate to me.
It seems innate to you because of some of the childhood stuff you went through and who mom and dad were.
I think that's right.
Yeah, they gave you a competitive advantage in terms of what you do for a living. What's the website address of your organization?
slslaw.com.
What's the name of the firm again?
Shapiro, Lifshitz, and Schramm.
And let me have that website address one more time.
slslaw.com.
And your name again is?
Marnie Lefkowitz-Aram, not Schramm.
All right. And the name of the firm one last time?
Shapiro, Lifshitz, and Schramm.
And this has been your Business Spotlight.
Do you need a car? Been shopping only to be turned down because of bad credit, low credit, no credit, bankruptcy, or divorce? Guess what? Today's your lucky day, because now you can buy a car, truck, or SUV, just about any vehicle. It's true. Bad credit? Doesn't matter. No credit? Doesn't matter. Bankruptcy or divorce? It just doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, Your job is your ticket to your new vehicle. We're Auto Credit Express, and we've helped thousands of people just like you. Antonio H. told us, great company, got me connected, and the day I went in, I drove off in the car I wanted. 100% worth your time. Need a car? Get started now and drive off as early as today. Just go to 11ignoremyscore.com right now. That's www.11ignoremyscore.com. Auto financing the easy way. 11ignoremyscore.com. Get started today. Auto financing the easy way.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. I'd like to introduce David Laroe, CEO of Medicom Systems. David, what is Medicom Systems? What are you guys doing?
Medicom Systems provides software that's used by doctors and nurses for documentation and treatment planning at the point of care. It's embedded in hospital information systems and electronic health records.
Interesting. So where'd you grow up? How many different schools did you go to?
I went to seven different schools between fourth grade and 12th.
Seven different schools. Okay. And what was going on? What did mom and dad do for a living?
My mother was a registered nurse. My father set up training programs for large organizations, was typically offered the job to run those organizations, but then he'd move on because he liked to be in charge and he liked to start things up.
So you mentioned that you're the second of four kids. Tell us a little bit about the family dynamics when you were younger.
My parents were both alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
My older brother, who's 4 years older than me, had fairly serious birth defects, had about 10 or 12 surgeries between birth and 17.
Wow.
He's 4 years older. I have a younger brother and sister, 6 and 7 years older. So the family was in chaos a lot, taking care of either my older brother or the babies. So I was sort of the middle child accommodator, peacemaker, golden child type.
So, David, why don't you take it from here?
With a occasional or maybe more than a chaos at home, and the eldest child who's going to have to manage that and navigate through it, if you kind of talk about the importance of being able to read situations, if you could.
Okay, I would come down in the morning and try to figure out what the dynamic in the house was. There was a crisis between my parents because of their problems, something going on with my brother, the younger kids who we called the babies for years, and I would read it and try to get everybody to a sort of place of comfort and get out of the house with as little emotional damage as possible.
And you also do the same thing where you're getting uprooted in your schooling repeatedly.
Right. I got very good at going into a new situation, reading the people, getting to know what made them tick, who the leaders were, who the followers were, how to get involved in that so I'd feel part of the community, even if it was kids or later in high school. I was the accommodator and facilitator.
And how does that parlay to your management today?
Well, we're a software company that produces a very valuable piece of intellectual property. It's all produced by our employees. The worst thing that can happen is to lose an employee for us. So that has made me able to read employees, find out what makes them tick, find out who wants to be a leader socially, who wants to be a leader intellectually, and empower both of those in my team.
You mentioned before that your father didn't like working for anyone. How has that impacted you?
I would rather be the person who takes the risks and sets the vision and has to carry it out than follow somebody else's vision.
Mm-hmm. Your older brother, how did that affect your empathy and your building an organization?
Well, my brother couldn't play sports. I was a very good athlete when I was younger.
Yeah.
So he was blind in one eye.
Yeah.
He was treated badly by the other kids. I could see that.
Yeah.
Part of my role in the family was to make sure that he felt in some way connected to what everybody else was doing, because there was a lot of...
How's that helped your successful build of Medicom Systems? The fact that you treated your brother, you made sure your brother was recognized, respected, and included. How's that helped you build the business?
I think the other people here who are running businesses would agree with me that if you really pay attention, about 10% of any employee group is in crisis at any moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
Financial, marital, social, something.
And you pay attention to that as the CEO?
When you're a small company and everybody is important, and it probably cost us $1 million if we lose somebody,
mm-hmm.
You don't want to lose people. You want to, if they're valuable, you want to get them through their crises, and other people see that and they want to stay, they want to work there.
Mm-hmm.
So look, your care for your family, your employees, comes through so clearly. What made you get into this business?
I always wanted to make a difference, and we're a healthcare technology company. I saw a good way to do that here, and I wanted to surround myself. I wanted to be surrounded by people who shared somebody who would make a difference in the world through what they do every day.
Where did you get that from?
Probably from in our chaotic house, just being the one who made everything okay. I was the one who stepped in to take care of the young kids. I was a companion to my brother. I was a peacemaker between my parents.
Haley?
How, being the peacemaker and having to focus so much on making sure everyone else is happy in your family and then now in your company, how do you find time for yourself, and how have you grown yourself and focused at all on yourself?
I'm always trying to figure out. I have a philosophy that every day the scope of knowledge in the world grows by X, and my knowledge grows by X divided by 5,000. So I'm always trying to find a way to learn something new, stay more engaged, and feel good about something I've done personally for myself that really doesn't involve anybody else, and nor should they care about it, because it's my way of sort of nurturing myself.
How did you do that growing up?
I always found another family to be part of. There's from third through eighth grade, and in the towns we lived in, I would I was a good kid. I was respectful. I had a way of ingratiating myself to with other parents who wanted an example for their kids. So I stayed at other people's houses a lot, and just took care of myself.
What is David? What's the website address for Medicomp?
It's medicomp.com.
Medicomp.com. We've been speaking with David LaRose, CEO of Medicomp Systems, here on Executive Leaders. Les, can you give us a quick readdown on who we've had the opportunity of speaking with today?
Sure. Willie Walker, CEO of Walker & Dunlop. Michael Biddick, CEO of Fusion PPT. Ted Davies, President and CEO of Altamira Technologies. And David LaRose, CEO of Medicomp Systems.
I would like to thank my co-hosts, Les Smolin of Vistage, David Kunzman of Pretoria Law, Helly Morris Cressa, Jim Wappis, Pagnotto Carp, and Michael Delpierre, Conversion Pipeline, for giving me hand structure in the questions. He'll be providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we thank you for joining us today, and please do have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Oh, nice show.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.